Welcome to The Art of Authenticity, a weekly podcast that explores what it really means to be authentic and build a life that's truly you, featuring in-depth interviews with successful business leaders, entrepreneurs, authors, and thinkers. By sharing their stories, daily practices, and habits, they will help you find a life that is successful and authentic. I'm your host, Laura Coe, author, entrepreneur, and coach. Welcome to the show. Carlos Maselli is on today's episode. He's a business and career strategist, communicator, and speaker. He has bootstrapped many profitable startups and advised hundreds of people on how to grow their careers. However, Carlos dropped out of the last startup he was in and took most of 2015 off to figure out what his next steps were. He had a vague idea of what he wanted, but he knew one thing. He wanted another startup. But this time, it was the startup of his personal life. If you're interested in making a change, this is your episode. It is packed with useful tips on how to approach that process. Plus, Carlos dives into the heart of the podcast with very personal and thoughtful ideas on a life that feels authentic and what that really means. I was even taking notes on this one. Enjoy the show, and if you like what you hear, please subscribe and write a review. Thanks so much for listening. Hello, I'd like to welcome Carlos Maselli. Hi, Carlos, how are you?
Hi, Laura. Pleasure to be here.
Thank you so much for joining us. I'm very excited to chat with you today.
Thank you. Same here.
You have been somebody who has been a speaker, a traveler. You've gone around educating on different things. You've worked on tons of different companies. You've started different companies. And you've thought about startups and entrepreneurship. What are you up to lately? What's your latest project?
Yeah, so, the last startup that I was running, which still exists, but I stepped away because I realized it was time to make a change, and we can get into the reasons for that later. I dropped that a year ago, and I basically took this whole year, 2015, to figure out what the next step was. You know, if anybody has seen anybody that has ever run a startup knows that it's sort of like being in a bubble. It's like you're under a rock and you have no idea what's going on in the outside world. So when I left, I was like, Obama's president. Interesting. It's like I had no idea what was going on. And I basically said, okay, I need to just put myself out there and explore a lot to figure out what this, I just had some vague, intuitions and some vague ideas of problems that I was interested in and things I knew I wanted to have or do, but it was all very vague. And so I took a year for a lot of exploration. And basically one of the biggest epiphanies that I had, one of the biggest, realizations, which, takes me to what I'm working on now, is that I wanted to work on my personal life before I started working on my, whatever the business was. So when people ask me now, what are you working on, a startup or not? I say, yeah, my personal life. my startup is, I'm going to the gym again. I have a girlfriend. That's interesting. I forgot how this thing is.
I love that.
Yeah. Because I think we have, I've been thinking a lot about this. And that's the thing. You can't really separate. Think how I've been approaching my personal life has also helped me understand how I should approach my business life and how I can help other people approach their, both of those lives for them as well. And the point is that you can't really separate them. You can't, if you want to do a good job, I think you need to be paying attention to these things. You need to be healthy. You need to be satisfied. I wouldn't say happy all the time, just because happy is more of a fluid feeling, but I would say you want to be at ease and at peace with what you're doing. So I realized this had to be the main thing. And so, for the last few days I've been, I rented my first long term lease apartment in Buenos Aires. So I've been buying furniture, all these things have been huge for me, and because I've been traveling nonstop and living in many countries for the last 5 years. Mm-hmm. So this was really a growing experience and something and it has given me the foundations to move into business stuff in a much more stable and consistent way.
I love it. And I love this idea of explore. You had a vague idea of what you wanted, but you had to explore, right? And I think so much of our life is listening to that vague sense, but giving it space so that you can explore it, because it sometimes has a little bit of a process of its own. It doesn't just always leap out the moment that you want it to. And have you found by taking this space and taking care of yourself, because I just couldn't agree more that, you know, your personal life and your business life really do go hand in hand. Has that vague sense of what you want gotten any more clarity?
Yes. Yeah, definitely has. But the point is that it took a while. I think that's like the main, if I could, you know, the first thing I would, you know, say to anybody that is, you know, one of the most, I don't know if harmful, but definitely imprecise, inaccurate concepts that I hear a lot, people telling other people about, you know, what they should do with their career, is you need to find what you want. You need to think really hard and figure out what you want, as if that's how it worked. That's not how it works. You can sit down and think for hours and days and whatever, and we learn a lot more by experimenting and putting ourselves out there and trying things and seeing what the feedback is from the world and how we feel about it, and that's how we learn about ourselves, about what we like, about what we don't like, etc. You know, we learn. I think, well, one of the things I tell a lot of people, especially when they're in their 20s, I'm 28, and I tell people that one of the things I think I did right. I've done many bad things, but many things wrong. But one of the things I think I got right is that I accelerated the mistakes during my 20s. I tried a bunch of things because you can't do that later on. I mean, you can always do it, but sometimes the trade-off, you know, if you have a family, if you have a home, like there's a point where you're attached to some people or assets or places or whatever, and then you can't make the same kind of mistakes. So the point is that by making those mistakes, what I did, I think for myself, I'm taking the term from this author called Nassim Taleb, who wrote Antifragile, very, very good book. And he talks about via negativa, some things that we can only get closer to by cutting things that are not, as opposed to trying to find that answer. So this whole year was trying a bunch of things and figuring out what wasn't that I needed to do. And I eventually got closer and closer to what it is that I had to do. And that's how I sort of, I am definitely starting to move forward with two specific business ideas, one much more time intensive than the other, but both of them somewhat connected and related and hopefully profitable.
And, you know, I can't express how important it is to everybody, how taking the time to think about it, it is so important. I left my job and I thought, oh, I've got resources. I'm not in my 20s. I'm in my 30s. I am going to just nail this. And it was a disaster. I spent 2 years pushing myself into the world, like looking for an answer. And like you said, just like when you say think about it, I mean, everybody's done this, right? Where you, it doesn't become just thinking, it's an obsession, right? You almost become like this crazy person pushing the same thought around like a hamster on a wheel. And that's not how you get to any solutions. It's just how you give yourself a massive migraine.
Yeah, I mean, to me, I think one thing people usually say, and it's not that they're not, it's not that they don't believe it, it's that they just haven't been asked the right questions, they haven't pushed the right buttons, is they say, I really have no idea what I want to do, I really don't know, you know, to me it's a whole total blank, and it's like, I don't believe that. I believe we all have some, it can be extremely inaccurate, extremely broad, but we all have some sort of tendencies, some interest. It could go from politics to sports to whatever. The first thing I wanted to be was a sports journalist. And it wasn't that, and I think it was just because I really had no idea what I wanted to do, but I enjoyed playing soccer and I enjoyed sports. So I said, I want to talk and do more of this. The point is that you're not going to be able to predict how that path is going to you can start from the broad thing of like, oh, I'm interested in politics, and maybe that path will take you into, oh, actually what you're really interested is in mass psychology. And the point is that you were never going to figure out if you don't jump into it. So I think usually people have some sort of interest, some sort of, you know, some clue of something that could be, you know, worth exploring. And then by experimenting and putting themselves out there, they'll eventually figure out, because they're going to say, ah, I don't like this part of this. I don't like this other part of this. But I do like this. Maybe I should do a little bit more of this. And, you know, you do that process quite a bit, and then you eventually figure out.
Yeah, because I think starting with your interest, the place that you like to spend time, what makes you excited, tells you a lot about who you are. And this is a process of learning about who we are, right? Like who we are at our core and how we bring that out into the world. And I used to say, I want a coffee shop. In fact, I just like coffee shops. I don't want to own one.
Right? Exactly, yeah.
But I think that process of really looking into one and thinking about it, and then I was like, oh, actually, I have to stand and think about the cash register. And it's not really that I get to hang out in the coffee shop as much as I have to run the back end of a coffee shop. And I have to probably go look at coffee beans somewhere. So it's important to follow your interests and then think about what a day in the life of that person looks like. And does that continue to keep you interested, or do you slowly, you know, lose interest? And I love this idea of excelling mistakes in your 20s. But, you know, for somebody in their 40s, as I am, who does have a lot more going on, that can be a little daunting if you didn't experiment at a younger age. How did you get from, you know, this vague idea that was just an idea, creating space, down to two businesses? What was your process to narrow it down? And when did you, and most importantly, how did you know this is what I want to do next? Was it a sensation? Like, how do you say yes? What's your process?
Yeah, great questions. By the way, on the coffee shop, when a new friend tells me, oh, I put a restaurant, I always say, I'm sorry. I feel bad for you. Like, it's such a horrible business to run. It's a great business if you can own it, but running it is hectic.
It's brutal. I mean, unless you're an absolute love of life being
exactly.
A chef, right?
You love it.
Yeah.
So I would say this question is something I've been thinking about a lot for myself, like trying to figure out how I got here. It's because it's the first time where something took this long to become clear. In a way, it sort of helped me realize that the strategy that I took was the right one, in that I basically said, I mean, I always preach, and I wanted to, you know, I really believe it, I should live this way. I preach that you have to see, there's, you know, we live in a world that is, you know, hyper-connected, you know, tons of, you know, stimuli everywhere, tons of information. It's very hard. Like, whatever you want to learn, you can go and get it, whatever. And when we know what we have to do, when we know how we have to execute, this is a great world to live in, because you have all this, you know, available information, some information on people and platforms that can help you execute on that thing that you need to do better.
Yeah.
If you want, if I would go to school now, I would kill it, makes sense, because there's all these tools to memorize things and all these great ways to like find information, and like it's great. Now the problem is, I think what I'm seeing, this is what I call the most common modern career struggle, is it hit me a couple of years ago. People were starting to, you know, I was paying attention, and some people were saying things like, I know I want to do something else, I just don't know what.
Mm-hmm.
That sentence, that didn't exist 30 years ago. That's a sentence that is very, like, it's very specific of our time.
Yes, it is. My generation was just like, I got a job, I'm psyched. Like, that's about it.
My father knows what he's going to do in 2024. Like, he knows he's going to be a manager for a bank until the day he retires. Like, he doesn't have that career uncertainty. He just has career. His uncertainty happens, you know, goes a lot more through economics and, you know, inflation and whatever. Like, you know, that's, you know, am I going to be able to buy the house, whatever. We have an uncertainty that's more about, am I happy? Am I doing what I want to do? Like, that uncertainty is very different. It's mm-hmm. very new. And so what I've been thinking a lot about in the last few years is, so, okay, so what do you do? What do you do when you know you have to do something else, but you don't know what that is? Where do you start? And what I think the answer is a friend and I one time talked about this, is his name is Ben. We had this conversation. We were talking about serendipity and how, well, it'd be great if you can like manipulate serendipity, because serendipity is this idea that you find something you weren't looking for. So what I usually tell people is, if you don't know what you want to do, but you know you want to do something else, you need to increase the odds of serendipity happening to you. What I mean by that is, you need to put yourself in more random situations where more random things can happen and can come to you, because you don't know where the answer is. I would say we used to use like a fishing rod. Well, now you need to just cast a wide net.
Yeah.
Because you gotta know where the exact fish is. So you need to just do a bunch of crazy things.
Well, it makes a ton of sense because if you are in a certain situation in your life and you continue to do the same thing, you will get the same outcome, right? So if you shift it up wildly and you go to that event, you know, you sign up for that class, you do something that you just would
Absolutely.
Never do, then you have a whole new range of options in front of you.
And it doesn't just apply to careers. People tell me, I can't find, if you want to find a boyfriend or a girlfriend, well, you need to do more things than you, so you can meet more people. It's that simple. Like, you're not going to meet them. I mean, even if that's online, but the point is that if you don't put yourself out there in situations that you don't control and you don't know who you're going to meet, then you don't have a chance of actually meeting that person, right? So, if that's your future employer or your future business partner or your future romantic partner, you need to be able to do those sort of random things. And so I realized that was the year that was ahead of me. It was a year of a lot of randomness and a lot of – it doesn't – randomness, by the way, doesn't mean anything. It means – You use those sort of vague intuitions. You use those inclinations to pick what sort of new thing you should do. There has to be a strategy, even if the strategy is not too specifically defined. There has to be something that you're aiming towards. So to me, what I did, I can get a bit more specific here. What I did was the first thing I realized is, okay, I have no idea what I want to do. I don't know what I care about. I'm very lost. So I took the last week of last year and the first week of this year, so the last week of December, first week of January, I actually did not go to any holidays. I didn't see any family, New Year's or Christmas. I don't recommend that part. But the point is that it was just how it worked. It worked out that way. But the point is that I had a bunch of questions that a mentor gave me. And I added some of my own, and I took 2 weeks to only be writing my answers to those questions. It took me actually 2 weeks. I wrote around between 8,000 and 9,000 words.
Wow.
And it was just me, like, what do I care about? What are my values? What do I want people to think of me? What have I done right? What have I done wrong? What kind of mistakes do I not want to make anymore? Very high level to things like, what do I want the ideal day to look like? What do I want? What am I good at? What am I not good at? There's a great question by this guy, Alain de Botton, an author, my favorite author. He says that we shouldn't look at envy as a bad thing, because envy is sort of a compass of things that we may want for ourselves. So I actually did a list of things that I envy of people. And it was like, oh, interesting. I'm seeing this pattern of like, I want, because you may think, oh, you want the fame. No, not really. Maybe what you want is the, respect or something like that. Right. Mm-hmm. So the point is that I've thought a lot about all those things. It took me a while, but it's a document that I still look at very often. It gave me this thing that I can review every time I feel a little lost, because it was like this, it's going to change in the future. Obviously that document is not permanent, but it is something that helped me figure out, okay, I need to work in this area, some this industry, whatever. And that was sort of my interesting, went more towards career and the work, the future of work. And yeah.
Did you say 8,000 words?
Yeah. I wrote a lot. It was 2 weeks where I said, I'm not going to do anything, work, any email. I'm not doing anything other than, if I'm not writing, I could be napping or playing with a dog. But if I'm going to be doing anything that requires energy, it's going to be answering these questions. And I think the good thing is that time of the year is great for them. Like, that's, nothing is going on at that time of the year. So I always recommend, if you're going to do something intense that is a solo project, do it at December and January. That's a great time to do it. So that was one thing that sort of got me a bit more clear towards what things I, it helped me figure out what things I, some of the inclinations that I had. The other important thing was, when I was leaving, I had a friend who I was living with in Chile when I was running the startup, and he would ask me a lot of questions. He would help me figure out some of the problems that I wanted to work on. I think the reason that what I'm doing now, I'm confident, is because I found a problem with the market and a demand. Not, that's how I've been thinking about it. Not oh, I want to do something. I just want to do this. It's more like I want to solve. I want to make sure that I'm solving something that exists, that is real. There's a lot of businesses that are not solving anybody's problem.
Yeah.
And so I wanted. So I was thinking about those problems, and then if a friend said you know, told me something really that changed my mind. It was this idea of there are bad ideas. not every idea should be lean startup into the future, and you shouldn't act on every single idea you have. We all have a lot of ideas. And to me, that was great because it was like I started having ideas, and what I was doing for this whole year, I was just documenting them and thinking them and writing, you know, how this would work and whatever. And I would share with friends and things like that, but I wouldn't necessarily that it didn't feel like it was this thing that it was like, oh, I just found something great. It was like, this could work, but this could work shouldn't be a foundation enough to launch a business.
I cannot stress that enough to anybody listening that it just because it passes through your mind, like my coffee shop and at my business, you know, we would do this. My brother has a great imagination. And so he had new ideas every 14 minutes. Maybe 12 minutes. And I just created a list. I just said, okay, you know what? I'm done arguing. We're just going to make a wish list. And we made this long list of things and I made him prioritize them one through, you know, 200. and you can't do one plus, right? It's literally only one can be one and the next one has to be two. And yes. It gives you some clarity about, you know, just because it's passing through your mind, you know, doesn't mean it's a great idea. And when you look back at it and you have a list of 30 things, you know, the thing that you got really excited about in that moment, it might have just been impulsive, right? We don't want to act creating an entire business out of a momentary impulsive moment.
Exactly. And I think one thing that happens here is that one is you have a lot of businesses that they say, well, this exists, there's a demand, it's clear there's a lot of competition, so if I do it, it's not crazy. I think that's fine. I think that can work, and I have no problem with doing that. But what the problem comes when you're fooling yourself that you've untapped a new market, that you discover this unique solution to a problem, and it's actually you've only looked at the surface of the problem and you haven't really understood it. I think people are not very disciplined in understanding the problem they're solving. I've seen a lot of people really smart, really connected, wealthy, like they have everything going for them except a proper understanding of the problem they're solving. So they come up with some sort of glamorous, cool, you know, hype idea, and they just go with it. And they thought about it for like a month. And I'm telling you, Laura, I've been thinking of ideas around the same problems for like 15 to months, maybe 2 years. And it took it only now, I'm like, I think I'm onto something.
Yeah.
Like 2 years to say, maybe this.
Yeah. Yeah. Because do you think it's because you can throw up a website nowadays, you have tracking programs. I mean, the ease to start something up to see if it sticks is the barrier is so low.
Yeah. This is one thing, depending on where you are, the ease to raise money is also crazy. And also I think the pressure, the social pressure, the glamour, the idea to be a glamorous entrepreneur, the idea that having a job is a bad thing.
Yeah.
All those things that have become vox populi, that have become this sort of like ubiquitous in the internet, especially in the younger crowds, like, oh, you need to do what you love, blah, blah, blah. Yes, I get it, but you have to earn it. And you have to work to understand how you align what you love with something people are going to pay for. And I think there's a pressure to be an entrepreneur quickly, which means you're going to have a bad idea.
And that being an entrepreneur is somehow better for everybody. I mean, after you've come up with this great idea, you have to be an entrepreneur, which is one of the most stressful jobs. And I love it, but I don't think it's for everybody. My brother was just telling me the other day, he teaches at the business school at University of Chicago, and he saw a girl and she's in the business school. And he said, what did you do beforehand? Well, I worked at Goldman or one of the big consulting firms.
Mm-hmm.
What did you think of it? Oh, I loved it. Greatest place ever. One of the greatest jobs. Love my team. Okay, what are you going to do when you're done with business school? I think I need to start a business. And he was like, why? Why wouldn't you go back to the consulting? And she said, well, because, you know, it's consulting. Like, I think I should do something with social value. And he said, but don't you think that you were doing things with consulting that was helping other companies. And so I do, I think there's this big, big backlash. And he's like, so you were happy, you were paid well. He's like, do they want you back? Oh, yeah. They keep asking me.
That is hilarious. There was a couple of friends here launching this new company, and they were like, they wanted my advice. And I said, okay, so what do you do? And when they told me the pitch, the sentence was something like, we want to develop like powerful connections that have social impact and blah, blah, blah. And I said, you just told me nothing. Like, I have no idea what you said, but you just like, and what really scared me was that these are smart people.
Yeah.
But they're not dumb, but the pressure of performing to certain standards, it's really crazy. And I think in the end, Laura, like I always say that, the biggest advantage you can have for your own career, but it's also, when I said like it's rare, it is rare, is can you think for yourself?
Mm.
And if you can really craft your own career, but it's really hard to craft your own career when you're just following other templates. And it's funny because the entrepreneurs think they're not following templates, but they're actually just following a new one. Like it's scary. It's a competitive thing out there.
Absolutely. And I think everything you're saying is so spot on. So Carlos, I want to talk to you a little bit because this podcast is not, just about talking about our successful lives. And we've been hitting on all of these sort of internal things. And I love this idea of yours of, having your startup, this year be your personal life. So it's really about what does success, mean? So that it feels good on the inside. It's not just looking good from the outside. And clearly you've spent a lot of time this year thinking about it. So if you wouldn't mind, could you define for us what an authentic life means to you?
Sure. To me, there's a part of it. There was a time when I tried to define success. And I'll tell you what the definition I came up with is for me. I think you can only define success in terms of time. So you can be successful for a period of time. You're not always successful. Like there's no always successful unless you sort of renew that every day. And what I mean by that is that to me, success is living according to my rules, whatever my rules are. I can, if I live according to what I think is important, then I'm successful. But that means it's a living, right? It's a continuous action. So to me, authentic life, it's probably something along those lines too. Is you know, sort of, am I? I really believe that every one of us has an inner compass that will tell you when something is right and will tell you when something is wrong.
Yeah.
Now, we all take the wrong decision many times, of course, obviously, but you still know. And I think you know. I think we all have that. Some are a bit more honest with themselves about it. Some sort of just try to suppress it. But I think if, you know, push comes to job, you will acknowledge that you knew what was right and what was wrong for yourself. And so if you have that sort of internal dissonance of like, I just don't think what I'm doing is the right thing, then you're not being authentic to yourself. Now, that doesn't mean, I think it's tricky because the tricky part of this is that I try to be careful about saying this is the one thing to do this, because if you were, for example, if you're 19 and you have, you know, 18 and you're just out of high school and you get a job and you hate it, well, you're supposed to hate it. You're 18. Like what? Louis C.K. has this great joke where he's like, I hate my, this job sucks. When you're, you know, a 20-year-old says this job sucks. And he's like, yeah, that's what we gave it to you. You're 20. So the point is, we've all done those bad jobs. So I think it's not so much about you feeling great all the time. It's more about, are you doing what you think you should be doing? Mm. And if you think you're not doing what you should be doing, you think you should deserve more than that job, then by all means, you're 20, go and try. Quit the job, try something else. But if the market doesn't give you a job, maybe you should be. So you see what I'm saying? Like, I think life will sort of give you the feedback as long as you keep taking those decisions.
But if I hear you correctly, right, like the idea isn't to say, well, my compass is telling me maybe I'm in the wrong place, but my wallet is telling me that for now I have to pay my rent. So even though I'm aware that this job and me are not going to stay together for a long time, I'm also clear that I need to pay my bills, so I'm not just going to do something reckless. And I think that's a brilliant point to make, because authenticity is something we want to be aware of, but we don't have to act impulsively on all the time, right? We don't have to feel good 24 hours a day, as you say. And that's a really great distinction.
I would even argue that you're probably going to feel, if you want to grow, if you want to get out of that, if you want a better job, if you want a better anything, you're probably going to have to feel worse in the beginning, because you're going to have to invest in yourself. Yeah, I mean, the biggest asset we all have right now is our free time. That's the biggest asset any one of us has, because everybody's going to school. Everybody has a college degree. Everybody can get a job. Now, you make the difference after that. So if you're 20 and you have a six-hour job, and then the rest of the time you spend playing video games and going out and hanging out, whatever, that's totally fine if you think that's right. But you're making that decision of not investing in yourself if you think something else is wrong. So it's not only what you're feeling, it's what do you do about it.
Absolutely. And so was your compass, your inner sense, this sense of authenticity, was that something you always felt connected to? Or did you have a turning point in your life where you went the wrong way for a while and then just kind of had a wake-up call and said, oh my God, I've got to stop denying it? Because the other side of the equation is some people... And that was the book that I wrote. You know, they know what's wrong, but they keep doing it and they do it. And, you know, after 10 years, 20 years, that compass gets real quiet. It's hard to connect back to.
Yeah, no question. That's a great question, Laura. I will tell you the person what I've done. And I'll tell you actually one thing before, which is I remember a question in Quora that I answered once, which was this: some kid saying, I'm pathetic. I'm just bored with life. I'm just going to school, whatever, and basically I have nothing going on. I'm just bored, and I feel nothing. And I said, okay, first thing you need to do is, I said, go to the shit. Like, you need to have problems in your life in order to want to move, to want to do something. The worst situation you can be in life is apathy, is when you have nothing's wrong, but because there's nothing wrong, there's no incentive to change. Mm-hmm. I'd rather have a lot of problems than have no problems.
Mm-hmm. Tony Robbins says saying you're fine is the worst.
Right, exactly. Yeah. Because you can't, so I told you, I remember telling this kid, okay, then stop getting money from your parents, or stop putting yourself in situations where other people are keeping you afloat, and learn to do it on your own. Because what makes life awesome is the satisfaction of overcoming things, of growing, of overcoming problems. People that don't do it, they think it's like the money or the trips or the whatever, and they don't get it. The trip is the reward. It's just sort of like the culmination is the action, but the reward is that you're able to do it.
Mm-hmm.
And I think when it comes to me, I think I've been blessed with, I'm very happy that I've had this my entire life, is curiosity. I've always been very curious. I've always asked a lot. Now, that was dormant during my high school years. I was a great student until I was 12. And then high school, I hated it. I was depressed. I was like very, very mediocre, average grades. Just, I didn't care about anything but playing video games and going out. Like, that's it. and I remember...
We would have been great friends. That's all I did in high school.
Yeah, I know, that's true, probably true. I think actually, you know, there's one thing I tell a couple of very, very, very smart people, very smart friends that I have, some of them that we have in common, that what I'm actually grateful for that period of my life, when I was an average, mediocre kid, as opposed to what they were, because they were like always impressive, is that I can remember what it was like to be in that place. They don't. And when I go to universities and I give a talk, I show them my tattoo. I have a tattoo on my right arm. It's a very small tattoo. And I ask, and it's a very, just a tribal thing that, you know, it's a very, just not, there's no meaning. And I ask to the people there, it's like, look, guys, you know, kids, what do you think this means? And they just look and they're like, we have no idea. And I said, I got it. Oh, because I got it when I was 15. And I said, I got it when I was 15, so what do you think it means? They always, you know, they have no answer. And I say, it means I was an idiot. Because I remember what it was like to need things to create an identity for you, because you're not happy with yourself. You're insecure, so you need to wear this thing, get this tattoo, get this piercing, get whatever. I remember being in that place. And I think I would have kept going that place if it wasn't that my family had to eventually had to move to another city right when I turned 18. And I decided, no, I'm going to stay here. I'm going to stay in Buenos Aires myself because my friends were here or whatever. My job was here. And I think that thing that wasn't my decision, the fact that they had to leave, that thing put me in a path of growth and maturity that I, if it wasn't, and I think I was lucky because of that. I don't take ownership of that change in my life. I take ownership of what happened later, but I do acknowledge that I was lucky and blessed that something may force me to correct my life in a path of maturity and growth. Because I think a lot of people, because they don't have a problem happening to them, they don't have some external agent sort of playing a role in where they go, they just keep doing what's easy.
Yep. And that pain, yeah. That pain point going up, right, is such a motivator. So, you know, once we perceive a certain amount of pain in our current path, we will make change. But sometimes if that pain lever isn't high enough, we'll just stay the course. And
Exactly. From that point on, I've always just been doing what I, if I was, not only if I thought I had to do it, but if I felt I was putting myself into the decision I thought I needed to make, even if it seemed like crazy for everybody else, I would do it. Because to me, the sign of having to do something is not, do people agree with it? Do I feel not scared with it? That's not the thing. To me was, am I thinking of and doing a lot to make this happen? And if I am, and I have that energy and that investment, then this is important I need to do.
If you're feeling dread and heaviness, it's definitely a sign to stop, right?
Yes.
But that lightness and that free and that motivation is such an indicator you're on the right path.
Yeah.
So now you have success, you have authenticity in your life, you feel you've taken this year off, you've explored, you do things based on what feels good to you. How do you keep that practice up? Do you have, do you meditate? Do you have some mantras that you live by? Do you check in with yourself? Like, what do you do that are sort of daily emotional practices or weekly or monthly to avoid, you know, falling out of favor with all of it?
Yeah, sure. I think, you know, to me, it's one of those things where I don't remember the word in English, but I know there's this graph where the curve keeps getting closer to, like, you know, the line, but you never touch it. You just keep getting closer and closer and closer. Mathematically, you just never get, you never get entirely there.
Yes.
I know there's a name for this, but I can't remember.
I know, and I speak English and I can't remember, so.
I don't remember anything math after high school.
Yeah, so, exactly.
To me, this thing of how do I keep myself, you know, happy, healthy, etc. It's one of the things where you just have to, you can keep improving, but you're always going to have some work to do. And I think to me, some of the things I do, meditation to me has, it's not one of the things I have stuck. To me, it's more just making sure that, it took me a while to figure out that relationships are the most important part of my life for me. Like the people in my life are the most important thing. And so if I'm not seeing people that I care about deeply, that's a really bad sign.
Mm-hmm.
I should be able, like, you know, for me, success is that I have a lot more time to see them than before.
Mm-hmm.
If I'm working more and then I have less time for people that I care about, then I'm doing something wrong. So to me, the way to work on it is, you know, I got an apartment with a very set of specific facilities, like, you know, the balcony looking at a certain direction of the build, looking west because I wanted the sun hitting in the afternoon. Like, I'm like very crazy about all that because I, you know, I'm very simple. I'm like, you know, I got a really crazy, amazing, expensive, but very comfortable bed. So to me, it's like, I will, you know, I'm getting all the right things that will make help me stay healthy, help me stay in track. I'm going to make sure that I see the people that make me feel good.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a lot more about right now. I'm a lot more about enjoying the moment than investing. So everything into the future is not everything for the future right now to me. And then the one I just try to be very organized. I think that's another thing that has helped me keep in track. It's like I have a bunch of notebooks with lists. I make lists of everything. You know, I make every night before I go to bed, I make the list of what I'm going to do the next
mm-hmm.
day and just go step by step. And I think that's how you get a lot of things done. I think that's how you also you know, free your mind from a lot of mental overhead.
Yes. I'm a big fan of the list. It is.
Yeah, exactly. I'm hoping to get into the meditation eventually, but I'm taking it slow now that I moved back. It's like a lot of new things, so I'm just taking it slowly.
You know, I think it's not necessarily right for everybody. I think people have to find what works. And, you know, at different times in your life, too, you need different things. Well, thank you, Carlos, so much. The amount of information is tremendous. I learned a lot. I'm sure everybody listening has learned a lot. If people want to find out more about you, where can they find you?
Sure. Well, they can find me in carlosmicelli.com. That's my personal website. And then if you go to every single social network, like the big ones, Twitter, Facebook, LinkedIn, I'm, you know, Carlos Micelli. You can, like, if you Google me, you're going to find me. And Micelli, it's spelled M-I-C-E-L-I, Carlos, my name. So, yeah, they can find me in any of those channels.
Beautiful. Well, I can't wait to hear what you do next. I will definitely be watching for your next couple projects. And thank you very much for being on The Art of Authenticity.
Thank you, Laura. It was a total pleasure. Had a blast.
Hey, thanks so much for listening. I hope you found some value in this interview. If so, it would mean the world to me if you hit subscribe, completed an iTunes review, or shared it with a friend. Every little bit counts. I'm super grateful for every single one of you, and I couldn't be more excited to be here. Signing off, I'm Laura Koh, and I'll see you guys next week.